Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, Lulu here. Whether we are romping through science, music, politics, technology, or feelings, we seek to leave you seeing the world anew. Radiolab adventures right on the edge of what we think we know, wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC, and U.S. healthcare spending has been steadily increasing, yet chronic illness and premature death are also on the rise. My next guest set out to understand the healthcare crisis after he attended the funeral of one of his patients, who he calls Ray. Here today to offer his solutions is Dr. Prabhjot Singh, director of the Arnold Institute for Global Health and chair of the Health System Design and Global Health Department at the Mount Sinai Health System, and author of a new book called Dying and Living in the Neighborhood. Dr. Singh, so nice to have you. Welcome to WNYC.
So pleased to be here, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And we all talk about Obamacare and things at 50,000 feet. You're interested in neighborhood healthcare development, right?
Absolutely, Brian. You know, I think you almost get the sense over the last 5 years that healthcare takes place on paper and in legislature. But the bottom line is that for the patients that I met, the pioneers that I saw across the country, the real work is in the streets. It's in our neighborhoods.
Tell us the story of one of these pioneers.
You know, I was so struck over this this last many years watching the work of colleagues at an organization here in New York in Harlem called City Health Works. I've been loosely affiliated with it over the years. It trains and manages health coaches from the neighborhood. They have GEDs. They help people in the neighborhood set goals and meet them, think about their future, how they're managing not only their illness, but how to incorporate it into their lives. And we're already starting to see that by working closely with clinics, food pantries, social services, they're able to make remarkable impacts in both health and actually in costs.
Something measurable in Harlem? Because it's always so difficult to actually find the data on health outcomes, public health outcomes from policy changes or even practice changes. Have you been able to actually measure anything?
You know, I think that's something I've been just impressed across the country, how much focus there has been at the neighborhood level on measurement, on making sure that not only that the work counts, but it can be made visible. The changes are visible to people at in hospitals and healthcare, policymakers, and so forth. Whether I've been in Minnesota or in Dallas, Texas, or in communities in California, measurements on their mind. They need to make sure that their effort counts.
So, for example, here in Harlem, what were you after? Is it asthma? Is it diabetes? What?
You know, one thing that kind of unites chronic conditions, diabetes, depression, anxiety, asthma, is that it's really not about just a 15-minute clinic visit. It's about every day incorporating changes in your lives. It's about setting small goals and sticking to them. The thing that I've been most impressed with is seeing the impact on the costs of care for very high-need, high-cost patients, but actually on the other side, seeing the improvements that they have had in their lives around anxiety, depression, and actual healthcare outcomes.
My guest, Dr. Prabhjot Singh from Mount Sinai and author of the brand-new book, Dying and Living in the Neighborhood. Anybody want to talk about neighborhood-level healthcare policy or healthcare organizations that either have to fight national policies or state policies or take advantage of them to actually improve people's health on the ground? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. You write about attending the funeral of your patient who you call Ray. Is that unusual for a doctor?
You know, I was just 4 months into my internship in training, and I think if I had been there for just 8 months, I might not have gone. And so it was really important for me, formative for me, and actually it is unusual, at least for trainees, to head to funerals.
What did Ray die of?
You know, that's what's amazing. He came to the hospital. He died within 10 days of meeting me in intensive care circumstances, and we never really understood why he died, but we do know that he had a storm of conditions, kidney disease, diabetes, depression, anxiety, that contributed to it. How that's caused, you know, you got to look to the neighborhood for those insights.
You quote the physician and anthropologist Paul Farmer, whose name just came up on the show the other day when we were talking about Haiti. Of course, he founded Partners in Health, which does all that work in Haiti. And he says it's our collective practice that is malpractice. What do you mean by that? Why'd you quote that?
You know, it's one of those statements that, you know, really gets me thinking. It says that we're actually, each individual may be doing the right work. My colleagues are doing the right work. They're doing their work by the book. But the playbook that we're working from is wrong. And I think what I was so struck by when Dr. Farmer brings that up is that we actually have to look at how we're organized, how we're partnering together, and whether or not the way that we're paying for the work that we're doing is in fact the right work. And as physicians, we've got to be part of that solution to call it out.
So finances are an issue here. Who foots the bill for neighborhood-level health care, what you call pioneers in neighborhood-level health care?
That's right. And I think in a big change that's happened over the last 5 years is that we've shifted our focus to just paying for, doing little activities in the doctor office to actually paying for how we actually are being healthy and measurably having populations be healthy. It opens up a completely new arena of partnerships and ways of being paid for doing work that achieves impact, not just doing your part as a big cog in a machine.
You don't just write about doctors and nurses in your book. You write about coaches and integrators. Who are they? What are these roles?
You know, I've been just, amazed by looking across the country by people that, for example, that are trying to build healthier housing. And they are part of public or affordable housing projects across the country. And part of what they do is they think about the health impact of the way that they're actually designing buildings, whether or not they're walkable, they're accessible. They are actually measuring whether or not choices that they would make and how you design blocks will lead to better health or not. So our allies in healthcare are actually in transportation, in housing, in the social services, in mental health. And every one of those people I see as my colleagues.
Tell me about another one of those pioneers. I know you profile people in various cities besides New York, Boston, Dallas, elsewhere.
You know, one of the heroes that I met personally in Minnesota was a woman named Doran Schrantz, who runs a faith-based organization called Isaiah. And what they did is actually organize over the course of 2 to 3 years around making sure that transportation stops for a new light rail that was coming in between St. Paul and Minneapolis was definitely going to stop in low-income neighborhoods. The impact they showed that would have on health for people to get jobs, to have walking possibilities, and to actually get to healthcare was bigger than anything you could do in terms of giving them access to prescriptions or drugs. Getting them there, having them be part of a healthy place, actually came from transportation, and Doran built a movement to get there.
How are we doing on that score in New York?
You know, we're starting to see a greater emphasis on walkability. There was an experiment I saw actually downtown of shutting down a few blocks, making downtown more walkable. I would like to see a lot more of that. You know, the city is really accessible for people that have money. If you've got Uber, you've got a million other options. But the bottom line is that if you're struggling to get a Metro card to get to your appointment, and you've got 50 appointments ahead of you over the course of the next few years to take care of a condition or get support, you know, I'm always struck by people saying that if you're wealthy, you use money to pay for time. And if you don't have money, you use time to pay for support. And that's what we're seeing.
Is it possible that Obamacare and market forces are pushing hospital, economics in the right direction in this respect, even if inadvertently? Because what we see with the consolidation that's taking place, a few bigger chains owning most of the hospitals and fewer of the big hospital centers as some of them close, is that there are more of these urgent care centers around. And, you know, I know that's driven by economics, but does it also wind up serving the purpose of having relatively easy first contact with the medical system that people can take advantage in a way that's actually good for public health?
Great question. And I think it's right to say that both the winds are moving in the right direction, but it's not good enough for people every day to just be surrounded by winds moving in the right direction. Getting to urgent care is very late in the game, if that's where you're headed to. I think what I've been most focused on is we actually need a new class of problem solvers in neighborhoods who are given the tools privileged have some regulation reduced so that they can experiment across the country to actually build a communities of solution around moving these wins into everyday reality for the people in our neighborhoods.
Is there enough financial incentive for people to become that neighborhood level practitioner? I presume you're talking about a lot of primary care physicians in addition to other people, when things seem to be going in the other direction. And if anything, primary care physicians are increasingly employed by these big health systems, and they don't make the money that they used to as private practitioners a generation ago.
You know, I think that part of that is, you know, I know that's the prevailing view as a primary care physician. If you actually look at the data, primary care doctors are actually being paid more. They're more at the center of everything that's going on these days. They're both entrepreneurs. They're in public systems. They're actually becoming leading voices, at least as I see in New York City.
Where's that increase in income coming from?
Well, it comes from, again, a shift in not just paying people for their 15-minute interactions. Primary care docs don't do procedures. They do a lot of talking to people, informing them. The question that we're asking today is the procedural work leading to better health, measurably better health, or is it all the other stuff that a primary care doc does? As payments shift, primary docs are actually doing a bit better. What they need is partners out there that are going to help them do considerably better than that.
Do you look at politics enough to have an opinion on what the implications of a Trump or a Clinton presidency are for neighborhood health care?
Well, you know, as part of a nonprofit organization, I can't talk about candidates. But I will say that under the next presidency, we've got to hit a few goals. One is that we have an unsustainable rise in how much we're spending on health care, period. It's going to be a quarter of our economy, one in every $4. And we've seen over the last 10 years that all wage increases for Americans have been wiped out by increases in healthcare costs. So there's money in the healthcare sector. The question is, are we making it as easy as possible to partner at the street level in neighborhoods? Are we making it possible for people to experiment? And are we making the right investments into public health, not just in medical care?
So what would enable that? If you had to name one policy change that would help make that a reality, what might it be concretely?
So one of the best things I've seen over the last year or two, actually coming from our Center for Medicare Medicaid Innovation Center, we actually have an innovations group thinking about healthcare, has actually been—
That's part of Obamacare?
That is part of provision that came out of Obamacare. That's right. They are experimenting across the country with something called accountable health communities. So, you know, to make that concrete, is a healthcare system actively aware of all the assets in neighborhoods around them? Are they starting to partner with them? And are they building pathways for their patients to actually connect the dots? Are they making it easier for that to happen? And we're seeing experiments on how do you actually pay for that and support it. I'd love to see that magnified, amplified, and I'd love to see movements like the 100 Million Healthier Lives movement out of Boston that's working nationally to organize a lot of these efforts to come front and center.
Dr. Prabhjot Singh, the director of the Arnold Institute for Global Health and chair of Health System Design and Global Health at Mount Sinai. He's the author of a new book called Dying and Living in the Neighborhood. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, a male and masculinity studies professor on the Trump-Billy Bush tape and this phrase that everybody seems to be saying now, locker room talk. Stay with us.